could. They say time heals everything, but I'm still waiting. I'm through with doubt. There's nothing left for me to figure out. I've paid
Welcome to Forgive the Wait, a podcast that focuses on debunking many misconceptions regarding sexual abuse. Here are your hosts, Kim and Nikki. Hey, Nikki, and welcome to our first podcast of Forgive the Wait. I am so happy that you agreed to do this with me.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
That's excellent. And Nikki and I are here, in essence, to break the silence when it comes to sexual abuse. And sexual abuse is probably one of the most taboo subjects to have in conversation. Now, the real question here is why this is. Nikki, what do you think about that?
Sexual abuse is incredibly common, but one of the least talked about taboo subjects. Let me give you a better idea of how common it really is. These are some statistics from RAINN, www.rainn.org. Every 2.5 minutes somewhere in America, someone is sexually assaulted, and 1 in 6 American women has been the victim of an attempted or completed rape, and 10% of sexual assault victims are men.
And from 2003 to 2004, there were an annual average of 204,370 victims of rape, attempted rape, or sexual assault. And about 44% of rape victims are under the age of 18, and 80% are under the age of 30. Now, contrary to the belief that rapists are hiding in the bushes or in the shadows of a parking garage, almost two-thirds of all rapes were committed by someone who is known to the victim. 67% of sexual assaults were perpetrated by a non-stranger. 47% of perpetrators were a friend or acquaintance of the victim, 17% were an intimate, and 3% were another relative.
And that's just the reported assault. Sexual assault is one of the most underreported crimes. More than half are still left unreported. Also, males are the least likely to report a sexual assault, although it is estimated they make up 10% of all victims. Young females are 4 times more likely than any other group to be a victim of sexual assault.
And given this knowledge and each of our own firsthand experiences, we're here to knock down the great wall of taboo, and that's what I'm going to call it. The more people that talk about this, the more they will be educated on the subject, and the more they're educated, the chances of their being assaulted decreases. Now, I'm going to kind of give an overview of why I'm doing this and why I'm here and why I want to break the silence. Now, it's really hard for me to get out there in society and talk about things like sexual assault and abuse. Let's back up a little bit. It's generally pretty easy for me. The hard part is when I get the jaw-dropping reactions from people. That has to stop. Yes, I was abused and basically tortured as a child. My older brother raped, molested, and beat me from the time I was 5 or 6 years old until I was 12. That was when the sexual abuse ended. He continued to beat me up until I turned 18 and moved 2 states to the south to get away from him. I never told my parents about the sexual abuse. However, I did tell them often about the physical abuse. The response I often got was, "What did you do to deserve it?" All right, that is just some messed up stuff. First of all, yeah. It doesn't matter what a kid does. They never deserve to get beat by anybody, parents, siblings, anybody. Second of all, believe your kid. If it's a consistent complaint, address the issue. My parents often made excuses for my brother, and they still do it to this day. My family did find out about the abuse when I moved back home after a bad relationship on the other side of the country. The guy called my parents and told them, I let my parents know that those things did happen, although they only know the traditional I was raped, molested, and beaten by him line. They never asked for more, and I never divulged any more. They refused to believe it for about 2 years. Now, my brother ended up in jail, but I'll save that story for how he got there another time. He ended up in jail close to the two-year mark of my not being believed. And my parents would visit him weekend after weekend asking him if he did those things to me. And he finally admitted it, and my parents finally believed me. So you're thinking...
But it took your brother admitting it before they would believe.
Exactly. They just did not want to have anything to do with believing it until they got, you know, some type of confirmation. And that's pretty sad. You know? Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're probably sitting there thinking, all right, score one up for Kim, right? Yeah, wrong. You know, they believed me, which is definitely a plus, but they told me, Kim, it happened so long ago. Just forgive and forget already. It's in the past. Move on. Well, Mom, Dad, it's not that easy. You know, I'm definitely in a far better place than I was just 2 years ago. You know, I do struggle a lot of times. And I'm not here to tell you people the perfect and the right way to heal. You know, Nikki and I have come here to share with you the wonderful information we've come across. You know, the world needs to know about this stuff, and we have to break the silence.
Well, you've been through a whole lot. Yeah. And one of the reasons why I got involved in this is primarily I've been, in my relationship with Kim, I've been listening to her go through the struggles with her parents and also coming to the place where she realized that she wanted to do something to help the world with this issue. I got to know Kim through a message board, live journal site, dealing with sexual assault and abuse. I became involved with a website that is called pandies.org, and from that I got onto live journal, and that's how I got in contact with Kim. Now, the reason I got involved with Pandies was that 20 years ago, it was about 2 years ago now, but 22 years ago, I had been living on the streets. I had been kicked out of my house and run away from the place that I had been put in, and was living on the streets from 13 to 16, and going between running away and living on the streets and being involved in prostitution to living back in the home that I had been in to running away again. And during one of the times that I had run away, I had hitchhiked with a man, a trucker, who had kept me in the back sleeper of his truck for about 6 weeks, and had sexually assaulted me and kept me locked up for that time.
Wow.
So, yeah, and one of the things that happened around all of that was that frequently, when I would go back to the place that I had been staying, I would talk about the things that had happened while I was living on the streets, because adult men who have sex with girls who are living on the streets are not particularly interested in being regular guys. You know, they're not out to have regular sex with regular girls, because if they were, they wouldn't be doing what they were doing. And so when I would tell somebody something about something that had happened on the streets, they were always minimizing it or saying that I was trying to get attention or things like that. So I got to the point where I just didn't tell anybody what was going on or what had happened. And this last incident, it was the one that got me off the streets for the most part, and kind of got me to turn around, you know, the direction I was headed in my life. But I remember very distinctly, I had gotten away from the guy and had been picked up by the police in California. I was in another state. I lived in Oklahoma at the time and had run off to California because that's where my parents were. And the police called my parents to say, will you take her, let her spend the night at your place or whatever? And my parents said no. And so
God, you poor thing.
So at that point, and I was still 14, and so I decided I wasn't going to tell anybody anything that happened, because they wouldn't believe me, and because I didn't want to have to be subjected to justifying what I did and what happened. And even though I was living on the streets and I was 14, people would say that it was my fault that it happened, because I was involved in prostitution, or because I could have lived at the home that I was living at, and I made the choice to leave. And
Right,
just
but
like,
you were 14 years old. I mean, you don't ask for these things to happen to you, right?
exactly. And even if I had been 28 or whatever, prostitution, people who are involved in prostitution are not asking to get raped, and they have a right to say no, just like anybody else does.
Exactly.
And to force somebody, to drug somebody, to hold them against their will, to force them to have sex, to coerce them to have sex by saying, if you don't, I'm going to tell on you or turn you into the police or whatever, that's still rape. That's still sexual assault. So I could tell you other stories, but I think that's the biggest one that got me connected with the whole sexual assault community, and then also with Kim ultimately. And so that's why I'm here. I'm here to, because I listen and have watched Kim grow, and seeing how she's willing to go public and to try and make a difference, is inspiring me to be willing to do the same.
I am so happy that you decided to do this. I think it's really going to make a difference, not only to our listeners, but hopefully to the general public, and they can become, educated on the subject and, grow beyond the great wall of taboo. So,
Yes.
let's tell our listeners some of the topics that we intend to discuss in future episodes of the show.
Okay. One of the things is the idea of being a victim versus a survivor. That and also the issue of trust. How do you trust yourself, your friends, and other people when these kinds of things have happened?
And we're also going to talk about why people don't report abuse. We're going to talk about educating your own children and other children within the community.
Yes, and I think it's really important on the education part that this is not just an issue of strangers giving candy or somebody who looks really gross being the person who's going to assault you. Very often, that's not the case at all, as we've already said.
Right.
We're also going to discuss mental health issues related to sexual assault, sexual abuse, and trauma. And we are going to discuss the false memory syndrome controversy.
Excellent. We're going to talk about how survivors of sexual abuse really have this need for power and control over their lives and everything that's going on. There is just such a strong need for power and control. I know that personally because I have to know everything that's going on, and before I do anything new, everything has to be planned out and scripted because that way I feel safe. We're going to also talk about how abuse can affect your sexuality.
And we're going to talk about the idea of people lying about or abuse, or, and the other side being people doubting that the abuse has taken place. We're also going to talk about sexually abused children and growing into adulthood. How does that affect people, and what does it mean?
Definitely. The other things that we're going to talk about are how to stop the cycle of abuse, how to get yourself out of it, how to help get others out of it, and a lot of that is talking about it. The other thing is discussing eating disorders and self-harm as a result of abuse and the coping mechanisms involved therein.
And we're going to discuss substance abuse and sexual abuse survivors, as well as the other side, codependency and being a sexual abuse survivor.
All right. And one of the other things we have is handling abuse when it's not you, but it's within your family.
So being the non-offending parent or a sibling or a relative of somebody who's been abused or who is abusing.
Right. And in today's episode, we're going to discuss the weight of sexual abuse or assault on you as an individual. And before we delve into the subject, let's go over the common definitions of the different types of abuse. Although the legal definition of rape varies from state to state, rape is generally defined as forced or non-consensual sexual intercourse. Rape may be accomplished by fear, threats of harm, and/or actual physical force. Rape may also include situations in which penetration is accomplished when the victim is unable to give consent or is prevented from resisting due to being intoxicated, drugged, unconscious, or asleep.
Sexual assault is a broader term than rape. It includes various types of unwanted sexual touching or penetration without consent, such as forced sodomy, which includes anal intercourse, forced oral copulation, which includes oral genital contact, rape by a foreign object, which can include a finger or other objects, and sexual battery, which is the unwanted touching of an intimate part of another person for the purpose of sexual arousal. The term drug-facilitated sexual assault is generally used to define situations in which victims are subjected to non-consensual sexual acts while they are incapacitated or unconscious due to the effects of alcohol and/or other drugs, and are therefore prevented from resisting and/or are unable to give consent.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the weight of abuse on survivors. Many survivors are hesitant to share their stories because they've heard others share theirs. They think that that person's abuse was much worse than theirs, and that their effects and complaints shouldn't dare be compared to the other person's abuse. Even though the severity of abuse may be different from one person to another, the effects can virtually be the same for both.
Not all survivors are affected the same way, nor does each survivor experience all the possible symptoms of abuse. The way one person experiences the effects of sexual abuse is influenced by their unique personality style, the particular circumstances of their abuse, and their relationship to the person who abused them, as well as many, many other factors.
You know, a lot of people say, but my abuse happened years ago. Can it really affect me now? You know, most likely it does. The long-term effects of sexual abuse can be quite pervasive, touching many different aspects of your life.
Relationships with others are frequently affected, as survivors often have difficulty trusting others, as well as trusting themselves. This leads to difficulties in establishing and maintaining satisfying relationships, especially intimate relationships. And this doesn't just include primary sexual relationships. It includes all kinds of relationships. Some survivors avoid dating relationships while others have frequent sexually intense relationships or serial one-night stand kinds of relationships. Survivors may question their sexual orientation, especially if they were exposed to frequent sexual experiences by a perpetrator of either gender, whether they would be averse to the idea of having sex with somebody of the opposite sex, or if they would be worried about being attracted to somebody of the same sex. Women who have been abused by men may fear men and turn to other women for comfort and intimacy, and the same is true for men. This is complicated by the fact that there is a high rate of sexual abuse among gay and lesbian children and teenagers, which lead them to question their sexual orientation even more beyond the fact that they have that orientation. In addition to dating relationships, relationships with friends are affected. The survivor's deep-seated feelings of shame and guilt make it difficult for them to believe that anyone would really want them as a friend.
Yeah, and regardless of how you've been affected by abuse, you always have to keep in mind that healing is possible. You can't just end it all for yourself. You can heal, and you have to know that you can get beyond it. Let's have an open discussion here. Nikki, is there anything that you'd like to add?
Well, let's just talk a little bit. What are some of the things that you were thinking about in terms of this podcast, what you'd like to accomplish?
My main goal for this podcast is really to get the word out there and for people to know that, you know, this isn't taboo. People are so comfortable talking about murder and other different types of crimes, and they're like, oh yeah, it's murder, and let's talk about the circumstances of how this went down and how this happened. And people don't want to talk about, you know, sexual abuse because it is such a it's an emotionally disturbing thing. And a lot of people, because this is so common, like we talked about earlier in the statistics, it's so common that people don't want to talk about it because so many people have actually gone through it, and it brings back such bad things for them. You know, that's one of the things that we need to get past and let people know that it is common, it's okay to talk about, and you can heal from this. The best thing is open discussion.
And that is actually one of the leading factors in non-offending parents having relationships with somebody who's an abuser of their own child. For example, a woman who was sexually abused as a young child will have a tendency to flinch emotionally away from the subject, not want to discuss it, not want to look at it, not want to see it. So then if she sees things that are of a concern, whether it's with her children, like in your mother's situation, her son was being abusive, mm-hmm. or if it's a boyfriend or a husband or father of the children, she doesn't want to see it. So she's going to subconsciously or consciously push it away, which leaves her children even more vulnerable to it.
Oh, absolutely.
So this is exactly why we need to talk about it.
Right, right. Because my parents never addressed the issue and never believed me as a kid. You know, I got myself into this little cycle, and there was a lot of times through my teens and even a few years of my early 20s where I put myself into a bunch of bad situations. And there were a couple guys that, you know, tried to rape me, and, you know, it was very difficult for me to say no. You know, the first time I actually had sex as an adult, I couldn't tell the guy no. I was too scared. I was just paralyzed with fear, and I just kind of laid there. You know, and that was, you know, it's not a great story for me to tell about my first time having sex. It wasn't wonderful. I didn't know the guy. It was a one night stand. I never talked to him again after that. And, you know, there were a couple other times where one guy I did report to the police, and it never went any further because the police said, well, you don't have any bruises. There's nothing that really, you know, can prove that this did happen, you know, besides the fact that you were late going to the movie that you were supposed to meet all the rest of your friends at. And that really doesn't constitute evidence. That just constitutes the fact that you were late. It's just a bunch of other things that happened. And you know, it just all comes down to this cycle that we put ourselves in. We're paralyzed by fear, you know, and I have post-traumatic stress disorder too. So I have a lot of flashbacks, and I kind of, you know, relive these things. And it's just a very difficult thing to go through. But, you know, again, we come back to, we've got to talk about it. We've got to get through this. And we have to stop the fear that we all feel. We have to know that we don't have to be afraid anymore, and we can talk, plain and simple.
Yes. And I think it's really important, too, the whole idea of protecting yourself. When you're dealing with children and adults around them, a child says, this happened to me. You know, not all children will say something happened. But if they do speak up and they say, you know, Uncle Tom touched me, and that whatever the parent's response is going to affect that kid later. So let's say that a parent says, oh, it's not that big a deal, or why were you running around in your bathing suit? Those kind of things stay with people. And then so when something like, as an adult, something happens and you have, like you're talking about, where you were raped by somebody maybe that you had just met, but okay, well, I know him. It's not like he jumped out of me out of the bushes.
Right.
Then people are saying, well, prove it. Or they're saying, you know, you shouldn't have done this, or why were you there? And that feeds that part of you that says, well, obviously it must have been my fault because this person, you know, I didn't do this or I did that. And that we want to get to the point where we can protect ourselves as well as protect other children and other, you know, and other people from sexual assault. Because if somebody does something, or you feel like Oprah talks about, if you have that feeling, that voice inside that says, you know, don't do this, or that person's not a good person to be around, or go inside the gas station, or whatever it is, then you want to listen to that voice. But when we're taught all this time but to minimize what happened, or to discount it, or to accept the blame for what happened, then we don't listen to those voices. And that's why people who've been abused as children end up getting abused later. Well, you know, repeatedly.
Oh,
sometimes.
Right, because we're taught to doubt ourselves, and we're taught not to believe our feelings and not to follow those little subconscious things that are saying, hey, 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 warning, warning. We don't believe that anymore, especially after stuff like that. That's totally
true.
It's a pretty messed up world that we live in, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. That's where that whole cycle of abuse gets going, is it ends up perpetuating itself. We just keep going through the cycles.
Right. And it's time to break it. We got to break the silence.
Yeah.
Knock down that great wall of taboo. We got to get out our sledgehammers and our big machines, and, you know, what that happens to be in this case is our big old mouths, right?
I guess so.
And we both have quite a bit of experience with our big mouths, don't we?
Never.
No, not you. It's just me, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'll take the blame for it. Thanks for backing me up, man.
Anytime.
So that's another goal of our podcast, is we're not just going to try and make this some big depressing thing, and that's, you know, this great taboo subject that needs to be talked about serious all the time. We're going to try and have a little fun with it, and we're going to joke around. Now, we can't guarantee it's going to be like that all the time, but that is going to be one of our goals, because we want people to listen, and we want people to get this information, and we just don't want you to sit here and be bored the whole time. And, you know, I wouldn't want to listen to something that's so boring. You know, how about you, Nikki?
No. But then the other part of that is that laughter is really healing. And I think that it's important to have examples of people who are enjoying their lives and can laugh about things. And it's not all just serious and focused on how depressing and unhappy and sad things are.
Oh, right. You know, laughter is one of those healing things. And you see that it's another type of a coping mechanism. You see a lot of people that are creatives out there in the world that, you know, create art or movies or music. And that's one of their coping mechanisms to deal with the hardships that they've gone through in life. It's something to help them get through and to move on. And it helps to make them feel better about things. And, you know, that's actually another thing that, you know, we're doing this podcast for. It's another coping mechanism for us and to help us feel more comfortable in society and for ourselves to break that own little taboo feeling that we all still kind of have.
Yes. And I also, you know, I think that's actually another good idea for a podcast, which would be talking about the creative ways that people use the experiences they've had to make the world a better place.
Oh, so
and
right.
Resilience.
Resilience is a big thing. And speaking of, you know, other topics, we would appreciate any type of feedback that you as listeners can offer. We do have a listener line, and you can call us at 206-350-8598 and leave your suggestions for topics or any comments that you might have for our show. You can also visit us on the web at forgivethewait.livejournal.com. But please keep in mind that any email, post, comment, or audio that we receive from you may be used within future shows, unless you specifically ask us not to, and we will abide by that because it's important for you to be able to trust us as well.
And it's okay for you to use a pseudonym if you choose. You do not have to use your real name. If you want to leave us a message or to make a comment, we will use whatever you ask us to use.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, this sounds like a lot of fun. We're going to have fun talking to you guys over the next few weeks, or at least talking to each other.
That's right. That's right. Here's another thing that, you know, I had mentioned to Nikki a while back was that I kind of expect some negative feedback from certain trolls that are going to listen to us or stumble across our website. And I think that that is going to be great. And why, you ask? Because those trolls are generally people that like that great wall of taboo and that generally carry the society's views on sexual assault and not wanting to talk about it or do a lot of the victim blaming. And I think it's going to be great when we get audio comments or other type of feedback from them. And we can use some of those things to base future shows off of. You know, if somebody says, what's wrong with you? You know, it happened 20 years ago. Get over it. Move on. Well, you know what?
Let's talk about it.
It doesn't matter. So here, let's use you as an example of society's views. And I think that's going to be a really great thing for us.
Yes, I think so too.
Excellent. Nikki, did you have anything else that you wanted to throw in here? Or do you want to wrap up the show?
No, I think I'm good.
All right. Excellent. Well, thanks everybody for listening. And we'll see you on our next episode of Forgive the Wait. You have just listened to an episode of Forgive the Wait featuring Kim and Nikki, debunking many misconceptions regarding sexual abuse. You may visit them on the net at forgivethewait.livejournal.com or call their listener line at 206-350-8598.